Okay, Brent, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I really appreciate this. As I told you in the letter, I don't know if you recall, when I was a kid, which has not been recently, you were one of my favorite players. I followed your career. Had great mixed emotions when you joined the SEALs. You were not in the majors anymore, but I lived in Los Altos, so I was going to be able to see you play. It was really a... and then they sent you, to Seattle, I believe?
Well, what really happened was that the SEALs at that time were had a very strong working agreement with Boston Red Sox.
Right.
And they wanted to bring down young pitchers, and the SEALs had a number of older pitchers. And the year before that, I had had a sore arm, although at that particular time I happened to be leading the ball club in ERA, which
right.
was a little peculiar, and I don't know that I was making any more than the next person that had just come back from the majors, you know.
Uh-huh.
But in any case, I was chosen, and they were very nice. They gave me my choice. Do you want to be traded, or do you want to go out on your own, and maybe you can get a couple dollars to sign, because you're obviously playing quite well, etc. So I said, I'll take my chances. So I called Lefty, because I happen to know him.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, sure. So I got a few dollars to sign, and I went with the ball club that I really appreciated to be with. So they were nice about it. You know.
Oh.
I wasn't happy about leaving, because I was living at home.
Yeah, right, that's great.
Yeah.
I remember at camera day, which to a kid, that was the greatest thing that ever happened. I was out on the field, and I asked you to stand still, please, so I could take your picture, and you did. Another kid walked up and said, who's that guy? And I was absolutely shocked that everybody in San Francisco, at least in the ballpark, didn't know who you were.
Well, it wasn't very likely. You know, let's face it, the greatest fans in the world really only know the stars. I mean, the people who have come back from Major Leagues, the name ball players. And I, even though I started out with the Yankees, etc., I ended up with the Browns in Baltimore, and we were in last place for years.
Right.
And the last place ball clubs just don't get any notoriety, that's all.
Well, that's true. That's very true, and it's the same today. I've got a couple of boys, and they know the Nolan Ryans and the Ricky Hendersons and the Jose Canseco's, but the Spike Owens and the Louis Quinones they never heard of. Well, okay, that's neither here nor there. We're going on. I'll ask you, I don't know how many questions I'll ask you, 12, 14, something like that, and if you would please just answer as long or short as you want to. If there's something you don't want to answer, don't, or if you want to add something, please do. Start kind of in the middle, June 15th, 1953. 14-game losing streak for the Browns and an 18-game winning streak for the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
And you stopped both of them.
Right.
In Yankee Stadium.
Right.
You remember that?
I sure do.
That had to be a pretty big game.
Well, yeah. You know, we were getting frantic. You know, obviously, when you're playing with the Browns, we had more losing streaks than they had winning streaks.
Oh, yes.
You know, that's for sure. But I think the thing that really bothered us, we came in to New York City, and the scribes were saying, gee, if we win one more, we're going to break our record for whatever, and now we got the Browns in here for a four-game series, and now we haven't won 18, we've won 22. And, you know, I suppose that's the feeling that every good ball club like the Yankees would feel, but for the scribes to write about it, and I truly never really appreciated the New York scribes. I didn't care for them, to be honest with you. They took advantage of a lot of ball players, a lot of good ball players, and they seemed to want to write the worst about people rather than about the best of them.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, as far as the ball game was concerned, yes, I remember it totally. You know, it's one of the real highlights of my life. We not only, I was interested in stopping our losing streak, I should say, and because 14 had tied our losing streak at that particular time. But when you go out to pitch a ball game, you're not really interested in the streaks. You're interested in winning that ball game, doing what you can. But I think somehow or other you get a little more incentive when those things happen. And I was a little miffed at our manager at the time. I got taken out in the eighth inning with a man on second base, I believe, and one out or two outs. and they put Satchel in. And not that Satchel wasn't a great reliever, but I really wanted to stay in for a full nine innings and do what I could do, especially since we were ahead at that time at 3-1, you know. But the managers do what they have to do, you know.
Yeah, that's a decision they have to make, and I guess nobody's happy with coming out, but sometimes it has to be.
Well, one of the reasons why I felt like my strengths were usually in the latter innings. I was usually stronger in the, as the game went along. If I had a weakness, it was getting through the first two or three innings.
Mm-hmm.
I seemed to feel my way through a lot of ball games unconsciously, and I would get hurt with a lot of runs. That's probably what really hurt my ERA, was the fact that they would score early and I'd get out of the ball game in a hurry, and then but I pitched a lot of complete ball games, considering that we didn't win that many, and also went extra innings in ball games, as much as 12 in St. Louis one time on a day where you could hardly stand the sun or the humidity. So that's one of the reasons why I really hated to leave, you know.
Mm-hmm. But Page held him, obviously. That was a fun score.
Yeah, he sure did.
A couple of more sort of milestone games, I guess you call them milestones. You lost the last Browns game and won the first Orioles game.
That's right.
Do you remember both of those?
Yeah. Yeah, the last ball game, I think, was against the White Sox.
Yes.
And I'm not sure, but I think the score was 3-2.
2-1.
Or 2-1, okay. But you get used to losing the one-run ball games, and they always say, well, the mark of a good pitcher is when he wins the close ones. I think the one thing that people don't realize is the fact that you, depending on what kind of a ball player you are, you have to be able to turn the double play. You have to be able to do the things that the top-notch teams do more often. That's why they're a better ball player than
right.
they are. And so consequently, one run difference, we give up those one runs a lot more quickly than somebody else does. One ball club will have a man on third base or third and first and one out, and the ground ball is hit and they get the double play and the run doesn't score. Our ball club has the same play and we're not quite good enough, we don't get the double play, and so the run scores.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference with that. I just had a lot of bad luck against the White Sox too. I just, for whatever reason, just things would happen. I seemed to pitch well against them, but I just didn't seem to beat them. And then, of course, the first ball game in for the Orioles, it happened to be that we're on the road, and I believe Don Larson pitched the first game in Detroit, and pitched well, but we lost, and I pitched the second ball game. And the reason I really remember it is that it was really cold there. In fact, the ground was frozen. And I slid into second base. I don't remember whether I was on first and went into second or whether I actually got a base hit and tried to stretch it into a double. But I got a strawberry that lasted all season.
Wow.
I mean, I went down about seven layers of skin.
Uh-huh.
And God, you know, we don't wear sliding pads when we're pitchers.
Yeah.
So I remember that one.
I bet you did. Did you go a distance in that?
Oh, yeah.
I thought you did. A while back, and I guess it's been, I don't know when it was, a year ago maybe, I talked to Ned Garver.
Mm-hmm.
And Ned, you're talking about the one runs. He said that he had some success in the minors playing on good teams and could see what a good team could do. And the Browns seemed to always figure a way to get the one extra run given up at the wrong time.
Yeah, it always seemed to happen. I don't know whether it's because we just didn't have the players that could make the plays, or sometimes it gets to be a habit. You always kind of wait for the other shoe to drop, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
You keep waiting, especially in the real close ball games. What's going to happen now? You know, you are a little tentative. Sometimes you'll pitch a little differently because, quite honestly, maybe you don't feel it. In my case, I was a sinker ball pitcher, so they hit a lot of ground balls. And I always wanted to have the double play. I'll be very frank with you. When we got Billy Hunter, especially at the Orioles, and when we had a nice infield where you could hit the ground ball without it flying through the infield like it did over at Sportsman's Park,
mm-hmm.
then I was very confident. And I threw a lot of good sinker pitches and made them hit the ground ball all the time. At times I would change my mind when we were in Sportsman's Park, two different hitters. If they were low ball hitters, I would pitch them up. And that wasn't my strength.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes I lost ball games because I went away from my strength, worrying about, well, gosh, we're not going to get the damn double play anyhow, you know.
Yeah. It's got to be very frustrating. I can very well sympathize. The Browns had some talented pitchers. Just to look at the one loss record, you would never know it. But if that guy in the infield can't move but 6 inches either way, an awful lot of ground balls get through.
Well, sometimes it was just a fraction. You know, double play is usually always a very close play at first base anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
And unless the ball is hit very, very hard, one hop right to somebody. But when the ball is hit to one side or the other, it's only a fraction of a second whether the man turns properly at second base or whether the shortstop, if he gets the ball first, gets the ball to him at the right level where he can make the turn if he has to bend down a little for the ball, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the matter of talent is minor,
mm-hmm.
but it's enough to make a difference. And I noticed it more, as I said, because I was a sinker ball pitcher, because I made him hit the ball on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, it really, really hurt my ego when I, in 1955, when after having a decent season in 54 with Baltimore, and I really felt like, gee, now we're going to have a better ball club because Paul Rich is going to be the manager and he's going to get more talent out here, etc. And then I hurt my arm in 55 and it just crushed me, you know.
I bet. Because you really had, the 54 Orioles were not a good team, but you had, I guess, your best year.
Yes. I felt it was my best year. Not necessarily did I win any more games maybe than I did in another season, but I felt like I pitched much better totally.
Mm-hmm.
And I my wins were against better ball clubs. I'm not sure, but I think I beat Cleveland quite often, considering in Cleveland that year had set a record for wins.
Right. I sure did.
And I always seemed to pitch pretty well at Boston, too. I won my ball games at Boston. Boston, Cleveland, and the Yankees, I always seemed to pitch fairly well against them.
And, well, your earned run average that year, and I had it, I believe you were like 10th in the league, something like that,
mm-hmm.
Which is pretty doggone good for, you had no hitting behind you there, although you may have had a little better defense. Without runs, you still can't win.
I'm sure that's the reason. Well, you pitch with a little more confidence, too.
Oh, yeah.
When your ball club's playing a little better, you're more confident and you can do a lot more things.
Yeah, let's go back. You were 23 or 24 years old when you first signed a contract. You'd been in the service?
Mm-hmm.
And you came out, you signed with the Yankees, is that right?
Well, I signed with the Yankees. They gave me a bonus, but basically I had a Newark contract that's international.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the one thing that I felt good about was that most all of the rookies that were signed in the Yankee organization, because they wanted them to play, they made sure that they went to a lower classification.
Right.
And I not only stayed with Newark, but I was probably, if not their best pitcher, one of the better pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
And there again, I lost some tough ball games when I really didn't think that I should have. But that happens to everybody, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I enjoyed the first year, and I enjoyed being with the Yankee organization. I really did.
Well, you never pitched below AAA ball.
Pardon?
You never pitched below AAA ball.
No, never.
That's amazing. You know, that's not quite the same as never playing in the minor leagues, but it's awful darn close. A lot of fellows at that time had a couple years more age on them simply because of the war, still started low. But you seemed to be able to handle it very well, and I guess if there wasn't a log jam at the top, you'd have been a Yankee a lot sooner.
Well, they had an awful lot of talent, there's no doubt about it.
Right.
You know, they used their young rookies to get the ball players to replace the spots where they were hurting, and of course we all knew that.
Yeah.
There was, I guess if you look back through the leagues, maybe in the mid-50s thereabouts, you probably find on each ball club, you find one or two ex-Yankee ball players, at least, you know.
Well, that's what they used you for in 1950.
Yeah.
They sent you to the Browns. I guess they thought that Ferrick and Ostrowski were going to fit in the bullpen.
Well, you know, Page was having a bad year, and they needed relief pitching.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the article said in the paper something that George Weiss had made a lousy deal. But hey, they won the pennant again, and they won the World Series. So
mm-hmm.
You couldn't fault what they did. And they had the personnel that they could play with. They might have given up a little more than what they should have for at that particular time, but they did what they wanted to accomplish to do, and they did it for 5 years in a row, so you can't knock what they were doing, you know.
What did you think of the trade?
Well, going from first place and last place is like going down in the elevator from the 50th floor to the first in a hurry. I was perturbed only from this standpoint that on trading deadline, previous to the trade, Casey liked me very much. Porterfield got hurt, and what had happened was that he had shipped me to Kansas City and said, look, I don't care whether you pitch or not, just stay in shape. We'll bring your bite back right after trading deadline. Well, Porterfield got hurt, and Weiss, who was the general manager at that particular time, looked back into Kansas City and to Newark to see who could replace him. And he said, what the hell is Paulette doing down here? And so he brought me back. And had I stayed in Kansas City till after trading deadline, I probably would have stayed with the Yankees for probably, who knows. I pitched well for him.
You'd only been in Kansas City a very short time, like 2 or 3 weeks, isn't that right?
Less than that, really. I think it was about 10 days.
Uh-huh.
And I felt bad about coming back. And then the thing that was really the crusher was that we went to St. Louis, and midnight came, and of course everybody's waiting for trading deadline. We're just sitting down in the lobby waiting. We've got a day ball game. In fact, I think we had a doubleheader with the Browns the next day. And I went up in the elevator with Casey, and we got out of the elevator about 5 or 10 after 12. And 12 o'clock was really bedtime. We were supposed to be in our rooms at that time, but everybody waited to see who was going to be traded, etc. And nothing came through the wires that we had made a trade. And so I went into my room, got undressed, and went to bed, and I got a phone call about 12:30. My wife had called me. She was in Kansas City still. And she told me I'd been traded.
Oh, boy.
And I really hit the fan, you know, because Casey brought me up. I mean, he liked me. I pitched well against him when I was in the Coast League, and Jim Turner was the pitching coach, and he was my manager at Portland. They were the people who were responsible for my getting a real good shot with the Yankees. They recommended me highly. So they liked me, and they really thought I was going to be a good ball player for the Yankees. But when Casey didn't tell me that, I thought that he knew and didn't tell me. And so I called Casey right away on the phone, and I said, you know, that was rotten. That was a lousy thing to do. He swore up and down he didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe him.
Yeah.
I really do, because Casey was not that kind of guy. He was always 100% with his players. In fact, I admired the guy. I thought he was psychic. I mean, he did things at times with the Yankees, with pinch hitting at certain times and doing things that were actually against all the rules of baseball, as we say, playing the percentages.
Mm-hmm.
And it would turn out. I said to him, I think you're psychic, Casey. I know you are. And he said, hell, I managed for 30 years and I never was on a good ball club. How could I be psychic?
Well, he sure did pull the white strings there for 10 or 12 years, didn't he?
Oh, he sure did.
What was the... You struggled in St. Louis. Everybody struggled in St. Louis. You played before crowds of 500 people, and it's had to be a pretty sobering experience. But then you went to Baltimore. What was the players' feelings about the move?
I think everybody was 100% happy, not only just because they you'd like to have the fans in the stands who are rooting for you. That gives you a lot of incentive and makes you feel like you're wanted. But and I don't want to slight the St. Louis fans, because the people who came out there, I mean, you know, when the Browns were in last place as long as they were, when you come out to watch the Browns, you got to be a hard-nosed fan.
I bet.
I mean, you got to love baseball and love the guys that you see. And be very frank with you, I get more calls for autographs right now from people who were kids in St. Louis and saw me play than I do from other people. Mainly because they're really, I mean, those people were really fans. But yeah, moving to Baltimore was great. They had a brand new stadium. The infield was nice, plush grass, you know. And the fans just—I had the greatest time of my life in Baltimore. 54 was probably the finest year I ever really enjoyed, as far as playing in the town.
Mm-hmm.
So, and as I said, I didn't—I wasn't able to play. What really happened was that I had severed one half of my tricep muscle on a bone spur that had been chipped off. You know, we get little bone chips in our elbows from spurs.
Right.
And I had a little sawtooth spur right at the edge of where the tricep muscle has two little connections. And I severed one half of the tricep muscle off of my elbow. And that's why the doctor, Dr. Bennett, by the way, one of the finest orthopedic surgeons as far as athletes at that time, said I'd never be able to throw a baseball across the street again.
Mm.
And he told Baltimore that, and that's when they shipped me out. And I told them I could pitch, and they said, well, we're going to send you back to the Coast League with Lefty O'Doul, and he's got a last place ball club. But he says, if you can pitch once a week, we'll pay you. At that time, they didn't have to pay you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could have just let you go, and that was it. And I was fortunate enough to work with a very fine orthopedic surgeon here, and we didn't operate or do any of that nature, but he reattached that little connection by taping it, and kept it on for about 6 weeks, and then I did minor exercise. And the following year, I went to the Cleveland spring training camp. They were the one team to invite me. I had pitched that well against them, I think, in the past, that they were willing to take a chance with me. And Al Lopez, the manager at that time, had said, you've made my team. And he said, we're very proud of you. Well, that was great. They had 20-game winners up the gazoo.
That's right.
They had Hudeman and Feller and Neuhauser, and guys like that were in the relief corps. And so I felt real good about having made the ball club. And 2 days later, Greenberg was their GM, and he said, no, I don't want to take a chance with a sore arm pitcher.
Oh.
And Lopez felt so bad. He said, I'm going to get you a job. He says, you can still pitch, and I'm going to get a job for you. And he called everybody, and finally the Phillies said, well, put him on a plane and send him here. And he says, we'll pitch him, and if he looks good, we'll sign him. And so I signed opening day with the Phillies. But I didn't play much. There was another last place ball club.
Yeah.
He wanted me to be a relief pitcher. And quite honestly, when you're in last place like that, you throw every day in the bullpen. And my arm didn't take that. I could pitch as long as I threw every fourth day. But I couldn't come back and throw in the bullpen every day. It kept the arm tender. And so that's where it happened. That was the crux of the whole thing, you know. It happened.
Yeah.
Baltimore was great. I mean, I wish to God I'd been healthy and had the opportunity to play in Baltimore. I would have really enjoyed it.
Well, you were still sound enough in the Coast League to where you were one of the top pitchers in the league that year. And that was a good level of ball, much better than the high minors today.
Well, everybody, I guess, at that time were trying to call it the third major league. It really wasn't, but it was a lot sounder than the International or the American Association.
Sure. Well, there were teams there that could have played in the major leagues. They may not have won, but they'd have been in the hunt much more.
I think there were some that were better than the Browns.
Yes. Well, you pitched in your major league career, you threw four shutouts. Is there one game, now the defeating the Yankees, I know, is there a game besides that that really stands out as a big game for you?
I'll be very frank with you. I didn't know and really didn't care an awful lot about how many shutouts I had, and I don't remember too many about the shutouts. Sometimes I think I pitched much better allowing one and two runs. But, yeah, there was a ball game in Detroit that I pitched where I had a perfect ball game for about seven and a third innings, something of that nature. And at the time, the last perfect ball game that had been pitched in the major leagues at that time was against my father in the same ballpark. Charlie Robinson, I think his name was, for the White Sox, pitched the perfect ball game against my father in Detroit. I think it was the year I was born, 1922.
Mm-hmm. You're right, yeah.
And previous to that, there had not been another perfect ball game. Well, I got that many innings through in a perfect ball game, and then you start to realize it. And I think it was Harvey Keener. I'm not quite sure who hit a ground ball to shortstop. But it was in the hole between third and short, and the shortstop made a good play in the ball and came back and threw the ball over to first base, and it was just a slap, slap. You know, you could have called the guy safe or out, but truly, I think the umpire made a great call in calling him safe.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as he called him safe, he turned around and slapped his thigh and said, oh, S-H-I-T, because he realized what he had done.
Right.
And of course, that kind of was a letdown, and I don't think we finally ended up winning the ballgame, but I don't remember what the score was. But that was, and could have been, probably the greatest thrill I would have had.
Oh, yes.
Especially had the last one been pitched against my father, you know.
Uh-huh, oh, sure.
I would have remembered that one. But the other shout-outs, this is what you want to do. You always want to shut the team out. But I didn't pitch that many, and so therefore they probably didn't hang around in my mind that much. You know, I really and truly think sometimes you pitch a shutout. Well, we had a guy for the Browns who came up, God knows where he came from, San Antonio, or his name was Bobo Holloman.
I remember Bobo Holloman.
Okay, Bobo Holloman came up, and Bobo had 20 line drives and 27 outs and pitched a no-hitter in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was, sure, it's a no-hitter and you're proud of it, etc., but my God, there were line drives all over the park and everything happened to be hit right at somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And I really and truly think that a lot of times if you pitch a shutout, it's because when they'll hit the ball a lot harder, but they hit it right at somebody. And I've been beaten with ball games where, well, in the White Sox, I had a ball game, one or two outs, and then in the eighth inning, I think it was, with a man on second and third, and we're ahead one to nothing or something of that nature. Anyhow, I was ahead in the ball game, 2-1 or 1-0, and the ball hit a high fly ball to right field, and they lost it in the sun. Both runs scored, and I lost the ball game.
Mm.
And you know, those things happen, and I think I pitched better in those ball games, but sometimes you don't really remember about them because you had a little more luck and you shut somebody out because you hit the line drive at somebody.
I talked to Jim Bunning and asked him about his perfect game, asking if that was that his best game, and he said it wasn't even close. He said there were several balls that were just hit right on the button, but they were, as you say, right to somebody.
Sure.
He said he pitched games and given up 4, 5, 6 hits that were much better pitched ball games than that.
I think you know, anytime you have a perfect ball game, you not only have to pitch well, but your control has to be a little bit better than average because you usually walk somebody during the ball game.
Sure.
And not only that, but you have to be fortunate whether somebody doesn't make an error.
Mm-hmm.
And those things happen quite readily. So I think in order to pitch a perfect ball game, you do have to be lucky.
Oh, yes.
You do have to have a good ball game. I mean, you got to have, even though you felt, and I felt that I pitched better than I probably may have in the would-be perfect ball game that I was hoping for, I may have pitched better in some ball games, but I think I remember that because I didn't get the perfect ball game.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the play, you know.
Well, the situation with your dad being the victim there. Your dad pitched forever.
Pardon?
Your dad pitched forever.
Yes, he did. Yeah, he was my idol.
And that. He was, what, 30 years professional?
That's right.
That's a... and
they put pretty good stuff in those farm boys at that time.
I guess they did. And I saw his record, I don't know what it was, but a phenomenal amount of wins.
He has the record for the most games pitched in the Coast League.
Uh-huh.
And he broke it, I believe, in 1940 or 41, right in there somewhere. And he pitched through 1945. Of course, he was a relief pitcher at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But it was 629 at that time, I think, or thereabouts. It was a phenomenal amount of games to have pitched, you know.
Well, most of them were starters. He was a starter up to the last 5 years or so.
A long, long time. In fact, in 1934, they gave him the name Old Folks.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a starting pitcher at that time and continued to be a starting pitcher for another 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, I believe I saw his record. He was a starter well into his 40s. I remember that.
Oh, yeah.
He must have been something. Who was talking about that? Who was the best pitcher you saw?
There's a lot of reasons why one person will think one's a better pitcher than another. I like people who went out and took charge of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I also would like a type of pitcher that would be a stopper. I thought, as far as being a stopper was concerned, he was not the best pitcher that I ever seen. But I thought, as far as having to win a ball game, I thought Dick Rashie was probably one of the better ones.
Mm-hmm.
As far as being one